Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're working on a game and the publisher's getting a little nervous that you're not making enough progress. And so they just move in with you. That's also an unpleasant experience.
Welcome to Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast, your place for resources and in-depth conversations with other game development professionals. I'm your host, John J.P. Podlasic. I've worked at 10 different game companies, starting back in 1989 with the TurboGrafx-16. Over the decades, I've developed games like Mortal Kombat, Avengers Initiative, Beavis and Butthead, and numerous others. I now work for a startup called Level X. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about you and the game development community. So if you have questions or ideas, give a call, 224-484-7733, or go to the GameDevAdvice.com website. So let's kick things off with the new Game Dev Advice.
Hey, so I finally got a new episode out. It's taken me a while. I've had a lot of personal and professional things going on, and episodes do take a lot of time and energy. So it was good to hear from people, Steven, Alina, other listeners, kind of helped give me some motivation to carve some time and make these new episodes available. Today's guest is Norman Morris, a 25-plus year veteran of the industry who's worked at both game studios and tools companies. EA, Sega, Crystal Dynamics, and Stormfront Studios are some of the bigger ones, along with over 10 years as a triage engineer at Perforce Software, helping developers. He's also a lifelong learner and self-taught engineer, master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, Toastmasters advocate, and personal coach. Hey, Norman. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to having this talk with you.
So where are you calling in from?
In my home due to COVID in Oakland, California.
How are you doing with everything going on related to COVID and all those kind of things?
I got my second vaccine last Saturday, so excellent. I'm feeling invincible now. I'm planning a trip back east and to Florida to go to my nephew's wedding at the end of the month. So hopefully I'll be all ready to do that. Probably continue to do masking and stuff like that in order to be a good citizen. The whole COVID thing was a real shock to me because I had worked in the office forever.
Yeah.
I hardly ever telecommuted unless it was just emergency, you know, reading a book at home or doing something. I'd never actually set up the home office.
Okay.
But then when COVID started, you know, I had about a week notice to say, go home and stay there. And they let me take my computer home and stuff. And it was pretty seamless. And I've been pretty productive since.
Yeah.
All I got to do is figure out how to keep, you know, my wife from coming and interrupting me and setting certain boundaries. But that works. And I don't have kids. I know people who have kids have really had a crazy time.
Yeah. So tell me about your current role. It's an interesting one.
I'm a triage engineer at Perforce Software.
Okay.
It's basically like a second tier support engineer.
Mm-hmm.
If you call us up and ask about some Perforce problem you have, you get entered into our Salesforce database, and one of the first tier people will probably take your problem and see what they can run with it. Mm-hmm. But if it involves some details of Swarm, which is our code review product, which is one of my specializations, or has something to do with the APIs or SDKs that we ship, it turns up being in my area. There's other triage engineers that kind of work on the server meltdown problems that can happen. Mm-hmm. And that's not my specialization. So I'm kind of taking a bit of a side role there, but it gives me a chance to code a lot more. I end up writing a lot of code in my spare time.
Perforce is like the industry standard for the game industry in terms of version control and all those kind of things. I mean, it is the thing, right? I mean,
that's right. You know, if you're I'm a big believer in self-teaching and stuff and learning things as you go. And one of the things I learned was, well, everybody should learn Git is my first recommendation, because you're going to end up having to deal with it at some point in your career. Mm-hmm. But right after Git, you should probably expose yourself to Perforce so that you can figure out how all the big game studios are using it. And the reason why is because it handles binary assets a lot better, and it's decentralized. So mm-hmm. it doesn't require you to have all the assets on your local machine. And yeah. it allows a central control and management of your assets, so you know where they are and who has them and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's evolved for a while. Perforce software was maybe 20 years old. I've been with the company 10 years. Wow, and I first used Perforce when I was at Stormfront Studios.
Yeah, I remember.
I wrote a program in P4 Web for all the developers to use to synchronize their local workstations and stuff with assets that came in every night. As that was a great career extension. When I ended up applying to Perforce later, they said, oh, you already know us.
Right. Yeah. You've used us in written tools. So that's perfect.
And, you know, I've always thought of myself as a tool maker. So working at a big tool company is a good idea. Mm-hmm. And by the time I found the job at Perforce, I'd already been, you know, laid off maybe 4 or 5 times in the game industry. And it's hard to keep a job more than 2 years. Yeah. So actually having been at Perforce for 10 years feels kind of a little miraculous to me. It was nice to have the steady job and yet be able to write tools that help game developers. And so that's one of the things that really motivated me to stay at Perforce and to keep supporting the game development community.
No, that's great. And I've been multiple places where you try and get around it, and maybe you're on GitHub or something, or Git or whatever it is. And then it's like, all right, we have to take it to the next level. And so we took it to the next stage. You reach out to Perforce and we did that level X. I remember that was like a transition and it's been great. Like, it's just kind of the evolution of game development when you get to a certain size and you're dealing with check-ins and all this stuff, because when people are idle and just sitting there waiting and things aren't, you know, that's,
oh, there's nothing worse. If you're sitting there waiting for a big,
it's brutal. That's
a big synchronization. Yeah, and nobody can do any work, or some artist checks in a big level and you're stuck now until everybody can get 3 gigabytes of goodness across your crappy network. And that's what we ran into in Stormfront Studios, and we transitioned from Subversion to Perforce. I mean, we tried to use the free tool, which at the time was Subversion.
Right. I remember that.
And it just had bad properties in that it required to have a copy of everything at every workstation. So it required really big hard disks and really long sync times. Mm-hmm. And it didn't have anybody to support it. You couldn't call anybody up and ask questions, even Perforce at that time was helpful. You could actually call them up and get some support. Yeah. We've always had live people at our support line for years. And that's not true for a lot of other software out there.
As a former producer doing the math, when you have all of these people idle and your deadlines and your dates and all that time is just wasted, it just makes you pull your hair out. You're just losing your mind. So it's like, you know, spend the money, get the tools, and keep people productive.
Well, it's not free. You got to build up some expertise in your organization to support Perforce too.
That's correct.
You need a Perforce admin. Mm-hmm. And they don't just come from nowhere. They got to get trained. And frequently what we find is, you know, the admin quits or something and everything's been trundling along great for, you know, 3 years or something. And they call us up 6 months later because they don't know what's going on and the admin is pretty clueless. And so we got to walk them through a lot of the basic and do the training ourselves in order to get them back and running.
I see.
But it is certainly the tool of choice for all the game studios.
Great points. How did you get started in the video game industry?
Well, just by accident, I was working at a company that did kernels for Unix. They ported Unix kernels to new hardware. Okay. And at the time, they were working on like 6800 processors and VME boxes. And I worked there as a company called OSS. Yeah, OSSI bought us, which was Fujitsu. And Fujitsu was using us to port Unix to their their hardware.
Right.
And then they moved us to San Jose, and this guy named Randy Farmer came into the office and says, you know, they need to build a team to import this program called Habitat that the Japanese really like, that had been developed by Fujitsu in Japan, to English and to the English market. And they wanted us to take their existing code and move it to, you know, basically implement it for them there.
What year was this?
Let's see. I kept my resume around in case I forgot dates. 1990, yeah, 94.
Okay.
Yeah. And the client that we wrote it in, it was we ended up rewriting it and calling it Worlds Away. The company renamed itself Fujitsu Cultural Technologies. And we created a graphical online virtual community for CompuServe.
CompuServe, that was standard for gaming.
That was it. That's, you know, Windows 95 was just coming out. And so having really good graphics on a PC was something that didn't happen yet.
Right.
And that we used a Solaris backend server and supported Macintosh, Windows, and Solaris clients.
Wow.
I was the tech lead for the project because, I don't know, the guy who's kind of the evangelist that kicked it all off just liked me and says, you can be the tech lead. I guess I was the only one to really stand up and volunteer in the meeting. Everybody else was thinking, you know, this isn't real. This is game stuff. I'd prefer to go work some kernel code, something important. So it was the old, separation between the core developers and the game developers. Mm-hmm. And so, we started up our own group, and it took about 3 years, and we created Worlds Away out of that, and it was a very successful product. Hmm. And our customers, the Fujitsu was happy with the product of that.
That's great.
So after leaving that, I ended up going into something that was a little more gamey, which is Total Entertainment Network, where I ended up.
That was online. I vaguely
that was that. Online games. Mm-hmm. And it was during the time when to get online, you still needed a modem. And so it would.
I worked at US Robotics briefly, and you get the handshake and you have the INF file to make it work. And
And we integrated with a lot of other games that were outside, like Quake and Quake 2 and Duke Nukem and Total Annihilation and NASCAR Racing Online. We added features supporting tournaments and leagues and communities of various kinds. And I did a lot of programming, network programming and C++ and SQL and things like that. And I ended up spending a lot of time playing Quake. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting.
Yeah.
And I had to travel a bit. I was a games integration engineer there, and I got promoted to being the manager of games integration. So I ended up traveling to various studios and talking to them about how they were going to integrate their games with our network. Mm-hmm. And the plan was that people would pay us in order to connect to the games. And the games went free and messed up the business model. So our business model was getting very, very hard to find towards the end there, around 1998 or so. And we ended up spinning up, half of the company became Pogo Games.
You might have heard of.
They ended up getting bought
by EA bought them.
So half the company started working on Java games, Pogo. And then my half of the company, which is the more hardcore network communication stuff, just kind of died. As I left that company, I ended up getting absorbed into Electronic Arts because they were looking for people to work on their networking stuff too. So I ended up working at Electronic Arts for about 3 years after that. And that trundled along for a while. And ultimately, everybody got laid off from the from the central technology group there.
Yeah.
My Pogo friends got to stay. They ended up getting bought and stayed there for a while.
Right.
That's what kicked me off into the game industry, was just that experience working on Worlds Away. Like I say, I got That's to cool. see my, you know, Worlds Away was cool. You built this kind of community, and you had people who supervised to make sure that people behaved correctly,
moderators
chat to each other. Yeah. Moderators of kinds. And this is all early on. And we thought we were creating, a snow crash.
To date myself, I was at, Viacom New Media, and we had the license to Snow Crash, and I was not on that team, but there was a team developing a Snow Crash game with, Neil Stevenson
really?
Yeah. He came by the studio, I'm told.
Wow.
And in development for a year or two, there was a Snow Crash game that
Never saw the light of day, but
yeah, I never heard of it. I would play it if I knew.
No, because it was a killer IP, and it was
Hopefully they had the pooning, you know, where you can go and harpoon the cars and follow behind them on your skateboard. And
I
thought that was great. That was wonderful action scene in Snow Crash.
So looking back, what do you wish you had known when you'd started going all the way, you know, back to the beginnings and all your career?
Well, I'm not sure I would have done things different. I think what really helped me move into the game industry and move up through the game industry is my innate ability to just learn new stuff. Mm-hmm. I just kept applying myself to learning different things as I went. You know,
the
way I learned C programming language was I learned assembly language first. Mm-hmm. And
that's hardcore. You're talking to the metal, right? That low level stuff. Yeah.
When I was in the Navy, I joined the Navy. I was a medic for the Marines, and I was stuck in Okinawa for a year.
Wow.
And I actually had a single board computer where you could go and you had a little hex keypad and you can type in the hex opcodes for the things you wanted to run. And if you typed all the hex codes in just the right order, you could write little programs that would loop and stuff. And so the big deal was to attach a keyboard to it and to actually, I typed in this entire half inch thick book of, of opcodes to build an assembler. So I would save that assembler on magnetic tape, meaning a cassette. And then I could actually use the assembler to write assembly language and compile that down and run that. I was doing all this when I was supposed to be learning medical stuff. And so they decided, you know.
Just put a tourniquet on it. That'll be fine. They're good.
So when I got out of the Navy, I just decided I wanted to be in the West Coast somewhere and work on computer stuff. Mm-hmm. So I went to Byte magazine.
Back pages
of Byte magazine.
Yeah.
And I counted where every company was and what their location was. And the one with the most everywhere was Sunnyvale. So I ended up moving to Sunnyvale and living in a little hotel there and going door to door.
Wow.
I got a job, which I ultimately did at a disk drive company down there. So
you just like yellow pages and like, all right, these companies have computers. I'm just going to knock on some doors, pound the pavement,
I made a big list. Well, first I picked the town that had the most companies.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went door to door in that town. It was really my sad day when I got the call from Apple about 2 days after I'd already accepted a job at this disk drive company, because this is back in 1982. The stock would have been worth a lot by now. Dug my way through the disk drive industry and taught myself C and taught myself assembly language better. And I managed some burn-in racks for disk drive companies and did some testing there. And then and I worked my way into file systems and optical storage. So we did these write once, read many disks. So you could write to them, but you could never read anything back. Or you could never change anything you wrote, is what the deal was. So it's always continuing. So we created a whole file system for that, and we made it cross-platform between Mac and PC. And that was actually a wonderful experience to prepare me for working at Perforce, where we do something very similar, but allow you to actually rewrite your code instead of having to write once to the file systems. But that got me into doing kernel hacks, and kernel hacks got me into working at Fujitsu, and Fujitsu got me into that. But it was all self-taught. I mean, I taught myself Unix. I taught myself C, taught myself assembly language. You know, by the time I got into the games, I was already the lead engineer for the Fujitsu Cultural Technologies there. For people that are looking to build their skills, I highly recommend that you learn how to use Linux.
Okay.
Right. You should really know how to use Linux, and you should really know how to use PCs. Learn both. So, and enthusiasm. You know, I think that when I first heard about Worlds Away, the fact that I showed enthusiasm in that meeting is what got me the job and placed me in there to do the tech lead stuff. But there is some amazing code out there, like, you know, the original Quake was some amazing code that could do wonderful things without using a lot of hardware and was able to render the graphics and keep your screen rate up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because frame rate is so critical for a first-person shooter, especially. And people have not played Quake or Quake 2, especially. That was just That was such a watershed moment.
That was a real breakthrough game. It was, you know, they actually used, they everybody was in a session together, but one of the servers actually, or one of the clients actually ran a server underneath. And so everybody was sharing the same server, and it was just spawned off of one of the clients. And the code was really succinct. And code like that is what ended up getting OpenGL and stuff more standardized.
So in terms of, and you touched on this a little bit ago, but in terms of advice giving someone to get their first job, I mean, you talked about learning stuff on your own and having initiative.
Yeah.
What kind of advice do you have?
Yeah, learning on your own and having initiative and going out and meeting people. I went to GDC every year for 15 years, maybe.
Cool.
Frequently it was paid for. Sometimes it wasn't. I would just have to go hang out and talk to people and get to know people and collect cards.
Yep.
I think in retrospect, I would focus a little more on social skills earlier on. I mean, I'm kind of a geek, right? I'm a programmer, basically, and I enjoy doing code.
Yeah. Right.
And I can manage things at a certain level. But I think one thing that helped me a lot was Toastmasters.
Oh, wow. Right?
Just going to Toastmasters meetings and being able to present and not be so scared and organize my thoughts and be able to get an idea across was something that was, that came too late for me. I don't think I actually took my first Toastmasters until I was 45 or something. I would actually recommend you sign up for it earlier and learn the social skills and
go
to meetups and stuff, which is another way to meet people.
Yeah.
And there are some other social things that you can do to build your skills. There's one of the things I studied at one point was neuro-linguistic programming. They call it NLP, but
yeah, it's NLP. I'm familiar with that.
Natural language programming. It's neuro-linguistic programming. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of opinions about it.
And mirroring and stuff like that, right?
Are very opinionated, anti that. But actually, if you just go and pay attention to what's going on or take an NLP training, you learn a lot about yourself and other people and their motivations, how the connections happen, how to socialize and where people go, where they spend a lot of their time in their internal processes and things. So I recommend that too at some point if you come up with the money or if you have the ability to go find the material and read about it. The social side is important, but it's also important to keep working on your technical skills too.
Definitely.
Right. Learn the various tools along the way. If you're interested in games, you know, and if you're an artist, especially, you need to learn Maya. You can go download Unity, right? And write your own games. You can go online and join communities of people that are working on various things and can help you with your own game engine questions. You can build your own little studio. At one point, I was laid off in 2008 or so, around when the big crash happened. And I ended up getting together with a friend or two of mine from Stormfront Studios, and we created a Unity game. And it was very early.
Wow, it was early Unity. Yeah. I remember you said 2011, and that was still pretty early. So 2008.
That was really early. And I was the technical guy for it. And the guy I teamed up with was an artist. And it was actually a side-scrolling shooter called The Adventures of Marshall Marshmallow. And so you would go and tap on the screen, and that's where you would shoot. And all the marshmallows would pop up, and you can go and hit them really quick, and then they would like frizz up as they got fried from being hit. And so it just slide to the left, and you would do that, and lots of Western scenes and some really great Western music that we had from one of the contributors. And it was actually on the it was on the Apple Store for iPhone for about a year there as a free download. I think we sold maybe two or three copies at a dollar, and then it went free. But it was a wonderful thing for my career. I've still used that that Unity experience when I worked at Perforce, for instance. One of the things Perforce ran into is that Unity was charging a lot of money for people to use Perforce. They wanted to charge a $750 fee in order to let you use their version control integration. And we found somebody who had a free version control integration for Perforce, and we bought it from them for like, I don't know, a small amount of money.
Yeah.
I ended up taking over the project. So it was called P4 Connect for about 2 or 3 years, where I would write code in C# and support Unity that would integrate with Unity and allow you to use Perforce without having to pay that extra fee.
I see.
Finally, Unity got smart and got rid of that fee, and then my project became useless because their integration was actually probably cleaner and better. So we deprecated that project. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot of C++ or C# in the process too.
Yeah.
So I'm still doing that now. The project I'm working on now is converting our API to use the .NET API, and it's a cross-platform API, so it supports Linux and Mac and Windows.
In terms of advice, trying to advance your career as a software engineer, like somebody 2, 4, 6, 8, whatever years in the industry, like what advice do you have for software engineers?
You know, GitHub is your resume.
Okay.
Go write some code. Go contribute to a project. Don't expect everything to fall into your lap. Don't play games all day, right? Go write.
I agree.
Go write games, right?
Yeah.
Go write anything, even if it's not a game. Find yourself a tool you like and contribute to it.
Mm-hmm.
Do pull requests, find bugs, submit those. If you participate in the communities on GitHub, then you're going to be making a lot of relationships that will serve you well.
And learning too, technically.
And learning a lot of stuff as you go.
Yeah.
And that's opportunities I didn't have, you know, back when I was growing up. GitHub didn't exist, right?
So, yeah.
So, and the internet didn't exist. The internet didn't come along until a little bit later.
Right.
Really get yourself familiar with the tools. Mm-hmm. Learn Git.
Yeah.
You're going to have to learn Git. You're going to have to learn how to use GitHub. You're going to have to learn how to do pull requests. You're going to have to learn a lot of things, and you might as well do it now.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much self-learned. I have a bachelor's degree in computer science, but I didn't get it until the year 2000.
Oh.
And that's when I was engineering manager at Electronic Arts. So obviously by that time,
right,
I really didn't need any of that computer science-y stuff.
Yeah,
very fair. I had just learned in my degree, mm-hmm, but it took, it made my wife happy, and she finally felt that I was a good human being because I had a degree, but it also took me one class every other quarter for 11 years to finish that.
Chip away at it. No.
Yeah. So
it's up to you for doing it and have the tenacity to.
Well, I'm glad I did. And I met a lot of interesting people, and I learned a few things in like the operating systems class, and there was a multi-threading class. It was good. But most of the time I was just a pedantic, annoying guy that knew all the answers that sat in the back.
And I see a lot of resumes from engineers, and whenever there's a GitHub link, it's like, oh, plus one's a resume, and lets people know, like, okay, it's not.
Hey, hope you're enjoying the show. If you are, please go to patreon.com/gamedevadvice. We'd love to see if you can support the show and help new episodes keep coming out. That's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks.
There's nothing worse talking to an engineer and be like, do you have any samples of your code? Like, no, I don't have anything. It's like, why not? Right? It's 2021. It's like, GitHub, that's great.
It's so much easier if you write it first, right? Instead of going to a company where they force you to do it on a whiteboard during an interview.
Uh-huh.
That shows you how to respond to stress. I actually passed a couple interviews like that, but I don't approve of that interviewing style.
Mm-hmm.
I think torturing people on a whiteboard is sometimes a little mean.
It's a little tough. Yeah, definitely.
But if you have something that exists, if you're an artist, do art, write characters, do environments. There's seasonal, add levels to existing games, right? Write extensions or games. All those things are possible. There's really no excuse to be lazy and do nothing but play games. You got to apply yourself.
Yeah.
And then play a game for a little bit to reward yourself afterwards. And like I say, if you go online, you'll find people that are trying to get together or work on something. So join some collaborative effort.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't turn out to make you a lot of money, it'll make you some experience and some connections.
So what's been one or two of your favorite games or projects to work on?
You know, Worlds Away was fun because it was groundbreaking at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the games I really worked on, there was one at a social strategy game we worked on at Super Ego, which turned out, we called it Rat Race. And it was fun because it had an AI where you had a whole office full of people, and they would respond to whispers and various rumors that were going on.
Really?
So it had this way that kind of memes would propagate amongst people. And I always thought that was interesting. That at Stormfront Studios, we worked on Spiderwick Chronicles. And I've always been kind of outside of the game industry studios. I've always been kind of a support organization and or networking infrastructure or organizational infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So like Lara Croft Tomb Raider was a good game that I have credits for at Crystal Dynamics.
I'm
playing that game.
Tying to that, what are you curious about right now in the industry? Like,
you know, I like how they're moving to next gen hardware and how everything's getting bigger, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure that just increasing resolution is where it's all at. I'm still thinking there's a lot of room in network multiplayer type stuff that will allow mm-hmm. us to extend our communities and customize the way we appear and what we have. A lot of that has improved since I worked on it so many years ago, but I think there's still some room there. So, and you know, I think there's probably some future with AR, Pokemon Go and stuff have proven that. And I actually play surprisingly few games. Even when I was in the game industry, I ended up not playing as many games as you would think because
I
was too busy doing work.
Work all the time. You don't have time for the games. I'm with you.
And I'm very disappointed with the game development process. I guess I'm segueing into something entirely different, but
no,
in most studios, I think that one of the things I ran into is it was really hard for me to get a job after I got to a certain age. Imagine that. I think part of the reason is because I was pretty expensive. And I think a lot of people are promoting from within when they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
One of your other podcasts I listened to discussed this same problem where there's no training opportunities for people to learn how mm-hmm. to manage a team, yep. how to do agile development, mm-hmm. how to use the tools. You know, they just basically, if you want to hire an engineering manager, they'll find somebody who's an engineer and make them a manager. And usually that person's not very good for a while.
Mm-hmm.
especially if they don't ever actually have any mentorship that they can talk to,
right,
to help them improve. And it also made it really hard for people like me who are wanting to get hired in as a senior manager or as a manager within the organization, mm-hmm. Where I could have brought a lot of experience that I had to bear. Yeah. They were having to suffer through training somebody up who didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
And I found this over and over again, and it's a pocketbook thing, right? It's cheaper that way. And people think the only way they're going to make more money is to become a manager. But larger organizations are getting more and more enlightened about that and providing, you know, better titles for people who remain in a technical track or people who retain in an artist track so that you can continue to get promotion or not promotion so much, but raises and stuff as you stay with the company without having to
be forced into management.
Correct. Right. Which is what happens a lot with.
Yep. And you touch about the ageism things too. And that's something that's kind of real. And it is real, right? Like people don't think about
it. It is
that.
Real. I was unemployed for two and a half years before I got hired by Perforce. I wasn't, you know, farting around. I was actually applying to a lot of places and I knew a lot of people in the industry and, I was just too expensive, I think. Mm. And also I was one of the class A game development lead and graphical developer type people they were looking for. I was never actually in the core of the studio. I was always kind of on the side, organizing things, building the tools, common infrastructure, common technologies. And so that always made it harder for me to find a good location for that. Mm-hmm. One company that did kind of match that was when I worked at Crystal Dynamics. They actually hired me in as a lead support engineer for the shared technologies group.
Okay.
The shared technologies group created a game engine or supported a game engine that was shared by a couple different studios. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I was there, it was this big battle between the studios over who would get what was in Perforce. because one studio wanted to change stuff and another studio wanted to change the same stuff on the game engine. And then somebody had to actually merge all those changes back into the core game engine, make sure it didn't break either of the game companies. And that it seemed to be a good idea theoretically, but it turned out that we didn't make the company any money as the core technology group. The studios made the money. And so the studios won the fight. They ended up each just splitting the game engine. They both took a copy of it and made it their own and laid the rest of us off. And so that was my last job at the big, before the big outage.
And that's too bad because the it's not the high profile stuff, but that stuff's critical. That's, you know, the tools and the foundation and all that stuff lays the groundwork for everything else.
I mean, Electronic Arts does it now. They have a core game engine, like one of them's called Frostbite, for instance, that shared them.
That's their engine. I think it's old Renderware, right? Was that Renderware, the factory?
Yeah. And but they end up, you know, having a whole team that kind of supports the game engine, right? And then have a way to farm it out to the studios as consumers. And they had enough pressure within the organization to keep the studios from overrunning them and just pulling anything they wanted whenever they wanted from. It's always been interesting, the politics in game development.
Yeah, definitely. It's, Game of Thrones there, or Roman Senate.
And then crunch time was no fun either. I kept wanting to work actually in the game industry on a game. So I worked at a couple places like that. And that's where I discovered crunch time too.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Like, what was your crunch story?
Well, there was a time at Stormfront Studios where we were working, what was it, 6 hours a day, 10 days a week, maybe more for some people. And it was required, right? They expected
6 hours or more than six?
Well, I mean, 10 hours.
Oh, 10 hours. Okay.
6 days a week. Yeah. 10 hours a day, at least.
Yeah.
It might have been longer for some of them. And it got old. I mean, some of the team maybe needed that time, but a lot of the team were sitting around just kind of.
That mandatory part of it.
During the crunch, because it was mandatory, and it made me lose respect for my management because they were forcing us to do this. I always think that crunch is just a symptom of bad planning, right? I know anytime you're working on a small game studio, you usually have a publisher that's involved. And so they'll provide a lot of pressure for you to get things out on time, but you got to make sure that you give them a reasonable schedule that you can meet instead of giving them the blue sky that you'd really like to have, because that's what forces the crunch towards the end of the cycle. Mm-hmm. And then the quality of the game starts to drop precipitously after you start crunching for any period of time. And the people become unhappy too. So you end up with a lot of unexpected people leaving or transferring, and that's not good either.
No, that's huge to a project when you lose those key stakeholders and stuff. And and to push back, right? Like, because a small studio with a publisher, guess what? The publisher keeps moving the goalposts, right? You know, I mean, that's what they do. And you have to be like, call bullshit and be like, hey, that's
not what we're doing. I've also been there before you're working on a game and the publisher's getting a little nervous that you're not making enough progress. And so they just move in with you. That's also an unpleasant experience, having two or three people from your publisher just kind of move in with you and work with you every day and do and usurp the whole direction of the organization. So, that's the other alternative.
Don't mind me. I'm just here to say hi and hang out and look over your shoulder.
That's exactly right. So both those things are possible. One provides stress for the other, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, what about potential threats you see the industry? Like, what scares you?
Well, I think the whole introduction of smartphones and stuff has changed the game industry a lot since I was in it. My presumption is, you know, when I'm thinking of games, I'm still thinking kind of console games and PC games, but really most of the games aren't console and PC games. Most of your games are like phone games or online games, and a lot of them depend more and more on infrastructure, like purchasing infrastructure and networking infrastructure and social infrastructure. You know, you're connected to Facebook or you're connected to to whatever. So the variety of games has come out, which I think provides maybe it's more attractive to younger people. It's less more adult games than I'm used to. I think that we're going to continue to spend money on adult games, but they're going to get continuously more and more expensive and take longer and longer. And now that we have really high resolutions coming out, you know, 8K games and things are going to really take a lot of time, more time than we expect. I think probably the footprint for a Class A game is going to move closer to 5 years rather than 2 to 3, which it is now.
Yeah. Bigger and bigger teams and bigger budgets and
then the bigger
risk
the
aversion because all the money and all
you got to coordinate them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to have the tools for them. But you know, this whole COVID thing has caused a shift in the whole industry that, that nobody really understands yet. I actually felt I was more productive working at home than I was at work. Although I really miss the social element. I miss having the nice cube where I could overhear what the conversation was in the break room. And my management technique of choice is management by wandering around. And that's really hard to do if you're distributed. So,
yep. Yeah, definitely.
So in a way, I'm kind of glad I'm not a manager anymore. I just get the right code. And I have a regular job, right? I don't have to worry about crunch time. I've been here 10 years, so I'm not really worried about being laid off. So I get to work on tools for game developers without having to suffer through the whole.
All that kind of stuff. So no, that's a sweet spot, right? Like you can do that without being in the belly of the beast.
And I got to a certain age where I just, the rat race wasn't as much fun anymore. The working the long hours and the having the long commutes. Living in the East Bay, when I worked at EA, I had an hour commute across the bay. When I worked at Crystal Dynamics, I had an hour and 15 minute commute across the bay. And so that was 2 hours a day of my life that was gone. And now that I have that 2 hours to do like gardening and other things, or even a little additional work, I'm a lot more comfortable. I feel like it's my life's a lot better. Than it was.
Totally makes sense. I have a long commute in the city, and I work more hours, and I'm more happy and productive in some ways because I'm not spending 3 hours a day commuting. So
So I miss the social aspects of
I do too.
Community. And there's got to be. I'm really happy that I spent time with the people I work with. Now that I'm kind of associated with support, I know the people in the support organization. So they've become my work family. And hearing their voices and talking to them and stuff is very helpful to me. I think I could get pretty lonely and isolated if I didn't have anybody to associate with.
Right. And I think the key too is you had those relationships pre-COVID. So it's trickier if you, like, we've hired, I don't know, 65, 70, 75 people during COVID and they've never met anybody and it's always been 100% remote. And that's a little tricky, right? Because you don't have those relationships. You don't know those personalities behind the voices and the faces. That's harder. Yeah. What's a funny or odd story from working in the industry? And I'm sure you got a ton of them.
There was a time, I'm not sure, you know, I'm a geek, so I'll tell you a geeky, funny story.
Sure. Totally perfect.
When I worked at Super Ego Games, I was in downtown San Francisco on 3rd Street.
Okay.
And we were using Alien Brain as our version control system.
Version control, yeah.
And I was in charge of the version control system.
Mid-90s, so something like that? Or
no, this is 04.
Damn. Okay, 04. Yeah, they're still around. Okay, that makes
sense. Anyway, we had a sister, our company was split into two parts. All the technical people were in San Francisco and all the artists were in New York. And so we had two Alien Brain servers, one in each office, and they would like synchronize with each other using JavaScript synchronization scripts that we wrote in order to keep everything in one place. But it was hot in that office. And so one day, one of the developers brought an air conditioner in and plugged it in, turned it on, and all of a sudden, kaboom, all the power went out everywhere on that floor.
Shit.
And our we yelled at him a bit and chastised him. And then we brought the power back up and our server wouldn't boot anymore. So we lost lost an entire partition on a RAID that we had. And it wasn't the good RAID, it was the speed optimized RAID. So that code was really gone. And we didn't actually have any, you know, good on-site backups. So we ended up using these same Alien Brain syncs to synchronize from New York the entire code base.
Wow. How long did that take?
It took about 3 days, three and a half days. And that was before the game got really big, right? I mean, this is a medium-sized PC game.
Wow.
So, yeah, be careful when you bring your refrigerator in.
that person was known as AC for the rest of their career. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, you know, the genius idea, do you have AC? All right, yeah. Tell you more. Remember that time? Damn it.
Yeah, I still know the guy. He's still embarrassed about it.
I was just trying to help, man. Damn.
I'm not sure that was the funniest story, but that's what came to mind.
Yeah. And, no, that had to cause some heartburn. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun working at Superego because I was the technical director there. It was a brand new studio. And so the founder and his good friend, who's like the lead developer, grabbed me and wanted me to help put together the studio with them. Okay. And so I was in charge of like buying the furniture and the workstations and putting everything together and setting up the
floor.
This agile process where we put 3x5 cards on the board and we would, you know, pick them out and use them for our tasks and stuff. And so I really enjoyed working there because it was so, from scratch. Everything was from scratch. I never actually had that ability before. I borrowed a lot of stuff from open source. So
Open source is your friend. That's cool.
Yeah, things you should learn for people who are trying to learn game stuff, you know. Lua, Bugzilla.
Right, yeah. What games are you playing or excited about right now? Like,
you know, I'm still playing No Man's Sky.
Okay.
Off and on. And I just like it because it just seems to go forever. Occasionally I'll switch, and then I've been playing Surviving Mars recently for some of the...
What platform is that where you
Actually for console, for Xbox.
Okay.
And so I've been playing those recently. And I got a back stock of other games, but I just haven't, I haven't been playing my normal stock of Bethesda games that I used to spend a lot of time on. I think partially it's because...
time commitment, right?
I mean, yeah, it's time consuming.
Yeah.
And I really kind of miss being able to involve myself in online multiplayer stuff, but being married and stuff, I was never able to carve out the time it took in order to, you know, join all my buddies in the guild on every... That would have been fun if I could have done it at one time. But, you know, those people, they do it for long enough. They don't have any life.
Yeah. It absorbs their life. I remember being in meetings and people would be falling asleep because you're playing World of Warcraft till three or four in the morning.
Some of the top level people at Crystal Dynamics were playing World of Warcraft at night and
and morning. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't know when they had time to sleep or to do anything else.
Is there anything I should have asked you about but didn't?
Don't be afraid to learn tools. Don't be afraid to be on the edges. Don't be afraid to connect with people. Connecting with people and going to meetups and going to GDC and stuff are all important. Spend time doing that and spend time practicing.
Cool. Where can people find you online? Like a website or Twitter or...
I have a Twitter handle, Game of Self, which is one word, I think.
Cool.
I hardly ever post there. Maybe I will now. Who knows?
Okay.
And you could contact me that way if you want. Okay. I'm at Perforce. If you contact the company, I'm sure they can get you in touch with me. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a support issue, you could always contact Perforce support and then ask for me. And that's another way to get a hold of me.
Yeah. That's very helpful again for this audience, because some mm-hmm. people are making games and it's a combination of aspiring and game developers. So yeah.
There's a lot of game developing people that I know through my company, through the support organization.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm sure you know people globally.
Yeah. There's a couple people that worked for me that are still at Eidos that I talk to all the time that are constant Perforce users. And there's usually, you know, some gnome in every company that knows something about Perforce. It doesn't hurt to be that guy.
Yeah. Right? No. Yeah. I mean, I think in my own company, Level X, we're like hiring for a tools engineer right now to help.
Well, I guess the other thing I would say technically is, if you're going to learn programming languages, learn at least one compiled language and one scripting language. So okay. like learn C or C++ and mm-hmm. then, or Java, right? Which I all consider kind of compiled languages, and right. learn Python or something, a good scripting mm-hmm. language, Python or Perl or something. Yeah. And that'll pretty much keep your quiver of arrows full for anything you need. Oh, and my wonderful set of tools I got from JetBrains. I just love everything that JetBrains makes.
JetBrains, I know. What is that?
They make in IntelliJ, which is the Java, the Java IDE. Lately, I've been using C Lion, which is for C programming.
Okay.
I also have PHP Storm, which I use for PHP development, and PyCharm, and some other ones.
Cool.
I think there's free community editions of some of these. So mm-hmm. Go out and learn yourself an IDE is also another good thing. Okay. You know, the old standard way is to do it in Eclipse, but setting up an Eclipse environment can be really painful. I discovered that the IDEs from JetBrains are much more convenient for me.
The last question is, you know, one piece of advice you give others working in the industry right now.
Hang in there, remain enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. Don't let yourself be ground down. Feel free to share your ideas and connect with other people.
Okay.
If you end up in an environment where you're feeling oppressed somehow, either they're overworking you or they're doing bad things because of your race or sex or something.
Yeah.
Move on. Go. Find yourself a better place, because there are more enlightened places now, and
right.
need to let them know if there's a problem with that.
Yeah. And I see this too. Just, you know, the bro culture that we grew up with is thankfully, you know, dying off. Right. So like, just you have to put up with that garbage, right? Like.
Yeah. We hope it is. You know, larger companies tend to at least give it more, more words and stuff. But it's difficult. The game industry has always been very testosterone-driven organization.
Right.
You got to be careful that people are really getting hurt if mm-hmm. you do that, and you do that without any thought.
Yeah,
it's time to grow up, I think, for the whole industry.
Yeah, 1,000% agree. Right. It's like, all right, we have to evolve here, and we have to get beyond the 15-year-old mentality of, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And learn to do the social skills.
Mm-hmm.
Toastmasters. That would
Toastmasters and NLP. Yeah. Now, no one's ever brought that up before. And that's an interesting idea with the Toastmasters. Yeah. Because I'm familiar with that organization. That's a very interesting idea. Well, thank you, Norman. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you for the interview. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast. Go to the website at gamedevadvice.com and you can find the show notes along with show notes for all the other episodes. Please also check out the new Patreon page at patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Have a lot of options up there for how you can support the show. Again, that's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks again for listening and being part of the show. Take care. Bye-bye.